My name's Polly, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
By God's grace, in a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't had a drink since April the 11th of 1977, and for that, I am eternally grateful. And I always like to get the important stuff out of the way first, and that is that I have a sobriety date, and I have a home group, which is Monday night Seal Beach Speakers Meeting, and I have a sponsor, and her name is Dottie. And I think those things are real important for me as a member of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thought we were going to do, I went up to Pat and I said, well, what is that prayer meditation? I said, is that us or the church or what? And she says, oh, no, that's us. And I said, well, you know, I didn't know how long, I thought we'd have announcements. And I'm California AA. I mean, it takes us a long time to get started before we get through all our readings and everything. So anyway, I was just kind of surprised to just, can I lower this? Yeah, I can't see over it. Besides, I don't even need a mic anyway. I'm so loud. But I don't know who's going to do the prayer meditation, but I'm kind of one of these people, if you talk more than an hour, you've just said more than needs to be said. So that's kind of how I feel about that. Pat, thank you so much. I'm so grateful to be here this year. I was supposed to be here last year, and I was ill, and I didn't get to. So I'm really grateful to be here, but I cannot believe that you didn't have a wonderful time with Michael. Michael is just, she's just fabulous. This is my favorite thing to do. I am one of those women alcoholics who has not ever had trouble with other women. And when I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, people were talking about, well, you know, I don't like women. And I never did understand that. Because I was a military wife. And I knew from the get-go that women took care of women. That's the way we lived. That's what we did. So when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was pretty sure that the women were the people who were going to save your life. And these are my favorite things to do. And I always feel especially challenged if I'm the retreat master. I think that's just too big a word for an alcoholic. You know, I'm not the master of nothing but screwing up my life. And that's what I'm a big master of. But I'm so grateful to be here. I love these kind of weekends. I love to be with women. It's my most favorite thing to do. I'm a person who just likes to be with other women. And to share a weekend like this is really important. And what I'm going to do this weekend is I'm going to share with you something that has been important to me. And that's learning to be emotionally sober. And this happened for me about 8 years ago. And I am a person who has had a lot of depression in and out of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's sometimes a lot of people who don't know me well find that very difficult to believe. But I've had a lot of problems. And the thing that, you know, I think a lot of times through our life in sobriety, we get to learn a lot about ourselves. And last year when I wasn't here, I nearly lost my life. I had pneumonia. I was on a ventilator. I was very ill. And I really became very aware that I did not want to die. And I really had not had that challenge before. And until I had it, I didn't understand how valuable, how precious, how wonderful my life is. So I know that it's better because I would have done anything they told me to do. I mean, a total and complete surrender around my health. And I'm really grateful to have had that experience and to know today that that a lot of the depression, because suicide was always an option for me. To die was always an option. And because of all this depression I've had, I just, you know how we'll go out and the next AA book that's come out, we just go buy it because it's out. And that's what I did when I picked up the book, The Language of the Heart. And that's where I read Bill W.'s last letter to the grapevine, of where he talks about emotional sobriety, our next frontier. And it was just by accident that came to pass. But I think what happens for all of us is that the book says this, is that our past is the great is that our past is our greatest asset. And because of my past, that's what touched me and what began to change my life. And I'm really grateful that I get to come here this weekend and share some experience that I've had about growing up emotionally and learning that nobody has ever been my problem other than me. I have always been my problem. And I'm really grateful to know that today. And the way I usually do this is because this is the way somebody else did it, is that I tell my story on Friday night because somebody who had the first retreat I did, somebody, my Al-Anon sponsor, was who told me, she says, this is what I've always seen done. And I said, okay, that's what I'll do. Because I didn't know how you do these kind of retreats. So that's kind of what I do. And what it does is it gives you an opportunity to kind of know who I am. And one of the things that I just really want you to know is that I'm not an expert in anything, and that I know that this retreat is not Alcoholics Anonymous, but it has been, you know, it has been put together by people in AA and Al-Anon, and I want you to know that I am not paid to do this. I am asked to do this, and because I need to stay, that I want to stay sober, and I need to be of service in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I am grateful to have the opportunity to be able to come here and share my experience, strength, and hope with you. It is totally a privilege. It is a privilege to be able to do anything in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And one of the things that I've learned here in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is that God never gives you anything more than you can handle. And I used to say, well, you know, I can't handle sponsoring another person. I can't handle doing another thing of service. I can't handle. And, you know, it's amazing that, you know, you can handle whatever's put in your way. And because what I finally learned after some time in this program is I don't do it anyway. It is not about what I do. It is about what I feel like I've been given the opportunity to be a channel, and it's just through me. It's not of me, and those are pretty hard surrenders if you can identify with that for an alcoholic, because you see, for me, I like all the, you know, pat me on the head and I'll do anything for you. I'll just tell me how good I am and how great it is, and I'll just do it more and more and more and more. And that's not what this is about. This is about being of service, and I'm really grateful to do it. And so you're not going to get a guru here who knows everything. So I hope that through the weekend you will share back and forth, because I don't know everything by any stretch of the imagination. And I don't, you know, I've always said gurus are self-appointed anyway. So they put themselves there and they search for a following. And that's not me. So let's share this weekend. That's what I would like to have. That's what I would like, is for us to share this weekend and be able to just do something woman to woman, and which is my favorite thing to do. And I want to just share a little bit with you about my experience, strength, and hope. And I may say a few things because it's all women that I might not say in, you know, at other times. Because one of the things that I think that are just women, and that is the feelings of an alcoholic woman. Is there Al-Anon women here too? Do we have some Al-Anon women? So we're all alcoholic women, because I notice the it's at AA and Al-Anon. They're invited. Okay. So this is all alcoholic women, and that's, you know, that's pretty. I think that's good, because I am also a member of Al-Anon, but I can guarantee you that the way I felt about myself and the humiliation and degradation I felt was brought about by being an alcoholic woman. And also by being an alcoholic mother. And those things are the things that took me to the pits of shame and degradation, are those two things. And I don't know about you who are alcoholic women, But, the pain, the wounds heal with our children, but the scars remain. And I think that that's the thing that I've watched through the years. And I want you to know that I don't stand around, bemoaning my guilt because I'm an alcoholic woman. But what I also want to do is that I also want to be responsible and accountable for my actions and those actions that I took as an alcoholic mother. I also am accountable and responsible for the actions I take as a sober woman and a sober mother in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And my son came up to me one day and he said that I have a sober son in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he said to me, he says, "Mom, I would have been an alcoholic whether you're an alcoholic or not." And I said, "I'm aware of that. I am absolutely aware of that. But I also want you to know that I have to remain accountable for my actions as an alcoholic mother, no matter how uncomfortable it makes you." Those are the things that I have to do. Because we've had a lot of healing in our family, but that doesn't mean that that's not still part of my experience, strength, and hope, having come through those areas of my life. And I'm really grateful for all the healing that has taken place. And it hasn't been easy. And part of what we're going to do with emotional sobriety is I want to do some, we're going to do some work in 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Because I think that those action steps are the things that start to just really free us up. And it's not that I think I picked those steps, it's just that this is not a step retreat. I just use that with the emotional sobriety because I think it's through the fourth writing, the fifth step, learning about our character defects, that we begin to see the things that stand in our way and keep us from being emotionally sober. And so that's kind of what that's about a little bit. I want you to know that I am living, breathing proof that you do not have to come from an alcoholic family to be an alcoholic. I do not come from the disease of alcoholism. My mother's father drank alcohol, and as far as we know, he's the only person in our family who drank. So maybe he was an alcoholic. I don't know. But I do not come from the disease of alcoholism. I come from a rageful father, and I come from a mother who absolutely had no self-worth. And today I know that that rageful father had no self-worth either. And I'm really clear today at looking at my parents because they desperately tried. Being an only child, I was not only loved, I was adored. I was like the light of my parents' eyes. But what happened was, is my parents are both abused children, very abused children, especially my mother. And what I know today is exactly what the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says. You cannot give that which you don't have. And my parents desperately tried to give me self-worth. They told me all the things. They said all the right things. But what happened was, is they couldn't be that for themselves. And it's that whole thing that I've heard since I got sober. Your actions speak so loudly, I cannot hear a word you say. And what happened was, is my parents' actions for their low self-worth spoke so loudly, and for their own pain and their own hurt. And those of you who are Christian, and I was brought up Christian, I'm still Christian, I don't choose to practice it in a religious church anymore, but I certainly am still a Christian, and I believe in the things that that stands for. But what happens is I believe in the sins of the father fall on the child. And the sin was that my parents had no self-worth, so consequently, I had no self-worth. And so if there's any connection there, then that's what it was. I think that connection, I don't think that made me alcoholic, didn't make them alcoholic. I don't think anything, I'm an alcoholic because I'm an alcoholic. And I knew no alcoholics prior to coming to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I never knew an alcoholic. I was a military wife, and all of the people that we met in the military, not one of those people are in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and furthermore, not any of them need to be. So I never knew. I mean, I saw movies and what have you, but that's it. But I also had this feeling of having to take care of, this feeling of needing to take care of other people. And my father was a very rageful man, and my mother just seemed to be intimidated by everything. And so what I had were these feelings of, I just was disgusted. My mother was, I felt like she was so weak, and I literally, as a young person, felt ashamed of her. You know, you need to stand up for yourself and all of these things that I felt like she needed to do. And then I would look at my father and he'd have these fits of rage. And I would hate him for that, for being so angry. And then as soon as he'd go through these fits of rage, he'd, you know, be really remorseful, and he'd try to, you know, make up for it because he was so ashamed. And I knew nothing about powerlessness. Nothing about powerlessness. I heard a psychologist once on the radio, and it has stuck with me ever since I heard it. It says that we get to work out our parents' pathology so we learn to forgive them. And what happens is all the things that my parents, I hated about them, I got to do. Only thing, I got to do it in spades. I did things, my father never, ever hurt me. Never. He might have raged about money and raged at my mother, and he may have, and he threw things and hit things, and sometimes he'd hit my mom, but he never hit me. And I'll tell you, as an alcoholic woman, and learning before the alcoholism really set in, the things that I did to my children are appalling. I was physically abusive. I was mentally abusive. I was abusive. In fact, I am the kind of mother, they don't let women have children anymore. I can still remember my little son James, who is in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. He had this wonderful head of curly hair, and I can remember taking his hair on his head and shaking him and say, I hate you, I wish you would have never been born. Now, what do you suppose something like that does to a child? Never was anything like that done to me. Never. So what I did was, I did things to my children because of my powerlessness, and it helped me to understand my father's powerlessness. And it was coming to those places through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and when we write all that stuff down and we get to the fourth column, and I begin to see my part in it and the things that I had done. So that's just a little bit of background about my childhood. When I was 18 years old, I married an Air Force officer. Now, one of the things that I believe that the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about is that what's wrong with me is soul sickness. That's what's wrong with me. I am a person who suffers from soul sickness. I believe that the disease of alcoholism is just exactly what the Big Book says it is, and that is that it is a spiritual malady. And that the disease of alcoholism separates me from the sunshine of the Spirit. And today I know that when a person has soul sickness and is suffering from a spiritual malady, nothing is enough. You cannot love a person like me enough. You cannot do enough. You cannot give me enough. There simply is not enough for a person like me. And the only way that that becomes enough, and that things begin to fill up, is a relationship with God. And prior to coming to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I did not have a relationship with God. even though I had grown up Southern Baptist. And I can believe you, I heard a lot about God. I had gone to Sunday school. I knew the Bible. I had Bible studies. I had learned all that. But the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, self-knowledge avails us nothing. To know it is nothing. I must put it into action. And these are the things that I learned here. So it's not that I didn't intellectually know this stuff. I intellectually knew it. And that's why today it is so important to me. When people tell me that they're staying home or whatever they're doing so they can get to know themselves, you can take and you can do with that whatever you want to. But as far as I'm concerned, that's a pile of bullshit. Because if you're sitting around trying to know yourself, I'm just telling you that that's somebody who's sitting around lost in their own head. And I don't know what kind of alcoholic you are, but that's a bad place for an alcoholic like me to go, is sitting around in my head. I know that this program is a program of action. And that unless I can have a solution, there's the solution. There's the answer. But if I don't put any action to that solution, there's nothing there. There is absolutely nothing there but head games. That's all there is. And I think all of that's fine for monks and priests if they're not alcoholic and all of that stuff. But for people like you and me, the solution is in the action of the program. And so you're going to hear a lot about that this weekend. If you don't like the way you feel, maybe you better check what you're doing. Because that's what's important. It's the action that's important. And I think the book constantly talks about the action. And I'm really grateful for it. And that was that whole thing when I finally got to the bottom line and that letter that Bill wrote to the Grapevine. When all else fails, and we're going to read that letter tomorrow, what worked was one alcoholic working with another alcoholic, no matter how bad you feel. And I'm grateful today that I understand that, because I love my life. I love the sobriety I have. I love the life I have. I love being sober. And I want to live big time. I want to live big time. And I'm really grateful today that that's how I feel. And that I just am stimulated with getting up. You know, I used to get up and say, oh my God, another day. Sober. Sober. And it's like today when my eyes pop open, I am so grateful I get another day. I get to do this today. And wow, what a difference. What a difference. At any rate, at 18 years old, I married an Air Force officer. And I was going to have to learn to take care of myself. I was going to have to learn to be a grown-up. And what I got to see is how intimidated I was about myself. And I carried this intimidation way into sobriety. And that intimidation was I didn't have an education. I still don't have an education. And I felt less than. Here I was, an 18-year-old girl, and I was with these women. And see, my perception, and we're going to talk a lot this weekend about the disease of perception. And that's what Clancy talks about, the disease of perception. And my perception was that here were these women, and they knew how to do all this stuff, and they knew how to have parties, and they knew how to carry on conversations, and I didn't know how to do that. I was so intimidated, and I felt so less than. And there's no way I'm going to measure up to these women. And I took a drink of alcohol. I don't recall the first drink I took. Now, my husband can tell you exactly the first drink he took. I don't even recall that. Mine was just a very gradual, insidious. I didn't even know what it was doing to me until it had done it. And I saw a sign one time in an Alano club in Salt Lake City, Utah. And that sign said, "The chains of alcoholism are too soft to be felt. until they're too strong to be broken. And I didn't even know what was happening. But what I began to do is, when I read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it said it so clear, because in the doctor's opinion, it talked about a drink of alcohol when we get that ease and comfort. And I wasn't looking to get drunk. I wasn't looking to be out of control. I wasn't looking to go to a party. I was just looking to have enough confidence to be able to carry on a conversation. And then the other thing is that to be drunk and disorderly is certainly not acceptable for Air Force officers' wives. So I learned to, I don't know if anybody had to do any controlled drinking, you know, where you just have to just kind of sip. I mean, the hairs on the back of my neck still stand up to think about that. I could not wait till I got home. A two-hour cocktail party can feel like a lifetime. I just couldn't wait till I got home and I could drink all I want and pass out. I'm going to mention drugs slightly because that's my story. And in 1962, I had these two little boys. Now, I don't have a clue how to be a parent. I don't know what to do for these boys. And they're driving me crazy. I am self-centered. I'm volatile, everything. I'm impatient, and here I have these two little boys, and they're making me crazy. And it's 50 below zero, and I can't put them outside to play. And another thing, my children wouldn't even think of sending their children out to play unsupervised. I used to just send mine out the door. But I just couldn't stand. These kids just made me crazy. And so I went to an Air Force doctor, and he said, take these. So from 1962 until 1977, when I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I drank alcohol, and I took Librium and Valium and Seconal and Nimutol. And if you take those kind of drugs and drink, I will guarantee you, you are not an active alcoholic. I do not understand speed freaks. I am one of these persons that always has had too much going on anyway. And I like that mellow, you know, just kind of ease it on out kind of feeling. And that's what I did. So as a result of that, I was the kind of mother that was passed out on the sofa. I call myself a couch potato alcoholic. I don't have any racy stories to tell you guys. I am so boring. It is so boring. I did not have a fun drinking. I just drank till I passed out on the sofa. That's what I did. And really, the only people who knew for a very long time was my little boys. My ex-husband didn't even know. Was my little boys. Because they were the ones that were always present. And what happened is that I was a parent of neglect. My kids just sort of had to take care of themselves. And I think about it, my little grandson will be 5 next week. And I think about his dad at age 5 and what his dad was doing at age 5 and what he gets to do. It's just like, it's incredible to me. The difference of how I just blatantly neglected these children. And James, I've had the opportunity to hear James talk in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and James talks about he doesn't think me saying a couch potato alcoholic's funny at all, because James talks about being a little boy, about being a 5-year-old little boy. And this little boy is walking back and forth in front of his mom as she's passed out on the sofa, and he's gripped with terror because he's certain that his mother is dead and his father is gone. That's the kind of terror that the disease of alcoholism does to little kids. I'm really grateful for the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because of the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have been able to look at myself, and it started by seeing myself in the mirror for the very first time. and early sobriety, and being able to look at myself and say, Polly, you are a child abuser. It's not that you've, you know, all the stuff of, you know, that we kind of call it other things than what it is. It was child abuse, pure and simple child abuse. And because of that, I was able to sit down and tell my children how sorry I am that I had abused them. And by doing so, I was able to listen to them tell me what it was and how it felt to have me for a mother. And my AA sponsor at the time, who is now in the big meeting in the sky, Frank said, you don't get to say one word. And when it's all said and done, when they get through telling you how they feel, then you get to say how sorry you are that that happened to them. Not one time do you get to make an excuse for that behavior, because it's not excusable. And I'm really grateful today for that, because I truly believe what the book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, to know the truth will set you free. And by us sharing that truth, the relationship that I have today with those boys is nothing. I mean, it's so good. Sometimes I can't even stand it. It's so good. I have a son that lives in Chicago. Now, it helps that I have an 800 number, okay? But he calls me every day. And, I mean, that's fabulous. Every single day. He just calls, and I'll get on the phone, and I have to say this long thing on my voicemail, or when I answer the phone, and he goes, hey! And I'll say, what's up? And it's just, it's wonderful to have that kind of relationship. And then I have another son who lives in California, and this is the yin and the yang of it. Russ is not in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I want you to know that he is so jealous of you guys, he can't stand it. Are you going away again? And it's just like he just can't stand it that I'm gone so much on the weekends. So, because we can't get together as a family. But, see, that's the yin and the yang. It's like, yeah, there was a time when he didn't want to see my face. And now, it's like he's so disappointed because I'm gone so much. And the healing is, and it's all because of good, strong sponsorship saying exactly what the book says. This is not about my feelings. This is not about taking care of my feelings. This is about being accountable and responsible for my past actions. And I'm so grateful that I got that kind of direction early in sobriety, because the gifts, because of that, have been beyond anything I could have ever, ever expected. I'm not going to go into a big drunkologue, but I would like to tell you that the disease of alcoholism took me to being pronounced dead on arrival. I came into treatment behind a car wreck, and I came in again because I needed to go back out and do a little more research, and I needed to do it. I'm one of these people that's always been looking for love in the wrong places. I don't know if there's anybody else like that. And in early sobriety, I did all that married. I mean, marriage vows were nothing to me. That was just something you said. Divorce, I was married to the same man for 22 years, but being married was just, I just really didn't take the value of marriage that I take the value of marriage today. And my ex-husband, my husband today and I've talked about it. If I knew and had the value system I have today and the commitment to marriage I have today, I would still be married to my ex-husband. Now, I'm grateful that I'm married to Dave, because I know that there are people who have as good a marriage as me. But I don't think anybody has a better marriage than me. And I love my marriage, but I have a different value system today. And unless there is abuse in the home, marriage is a big commitment to me. And divorce is just like drinking. You don't get to leave no matter what. Just like you don't get to drink no matter what. Because most of the time, whatever's going on will pass. It will pass. And abuse is something entirely different. I don't feel that way. But, you know, one of the things I'm real clear on is the selfishness and self-centeredness of the alcoholic. And Dave and I are two alcoholics married up. And boy, I'll tell you, it's like it ain't about what I want, and it's not about what he wants. It's about what we need to do as a unit in a marriage. And I'm really grateful that I have that kind of commitment today, that that's what you do no matter what. And I'm grateful for that. And if I'd have had that in 1980, I'd still be married to my ex-husband. And like I said, I'm glad things worked out the way they did. But I know today about the commitment of marriage, and I really did not have that commitment. And I did not have that commitment in early sobriety. It did not matter that I was married. I was still looking for love in all the wrong places. I just knew if you would just love me enough that I'd be okay. See, again, I'm trying to fill that hole, that emptiness, that soul sickness. I'm trying to fill that with enough love. I don't understand that it has to come from within. I just know if you'll just give it to me, if you'll just give me enough, if you'll just give me enough, then I'm going to be okay. And I'm really grateful to know that that if there's anything wrong with me, and the 10th step says it, God, it says it in the 12 and 12, it couldn't be plainer. And the 10th step, it says, if anything disturbs me, no matter the cause, there's something wrong with me. It's not about anybody else. It has never been about anybody else. It has always been about me. And if I'm uncomfortable, I know today, because of the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, that I don't need to go looking out here. And I can tell you right now, the women I sponsor, they don't come to me crying about what so-and-so did. I don't want to hear what so-and-so did. I want to hear what your part is and what so-and-so did. Because I believe that that's the answer. It's not out. It's nothing is ever outside of me. And I know it also is tied in to my relationship with God. And that's what I did. And I hit a bottom sober. I did it trying to get sober and sober. Of trying to have that feeling. And if the degradation and the shame I felt for acting out sexually like that was devastating, was just devastating. And I'm really grateful today that I don't have to do that one day at a time. I was on April the 8th of 1977, I was pronounced dead on arrival in a hospital in Bedford, Texas. And I just heard Father Leo talk the other night, and I love to hear Father Leo talk. He's just a total hoot, and I just love him. And but he does say some serious things, and one of the things I remember him saying was there couldn't be a resurrection if we hadn't first had a crucifixion. And he talks about that's what the alcoholic does to themselves, is the crucifixion. And sobriety and the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous is the resurrection. And April the 8th of 1977 was a Good Friday. And I always think about that. And when my birthday falls around Easter, it's always more special because it was Easter weekend that I got sober. And I'm so grateful for my life today. I'm so grateful for the life that I have. And for a long, many years, I carried that piece of paper around in my billfold. Because I just didn't have any spiritual recovery. It was just something to show people. And it was the thing that said that I was pronounced dead on arrival. And I don't need to carry that around anymore. Because I truly believe today that that's what it took for me. In order to begin to get on a path of spirituality. And I'd love to tell you that I have all that I'm just so spiritual and that all these things, you know, life is just, I've just sailed through the sunset for the past 21 years. But what that has done for me is for the past 21 years, I have been able to suit up and show up for life. And for the All the first 36 years of my life, I couldn't suit up and show up for life. I just couldn't do life on life's terms. I needed drugs that took me out. I didn't want to go have a party. I didn't want to do all the things that were fun. I just wanted to pass out. I did not want to suit up and show up for life. And for the past 21 years, I've been able to suit up and show up for life. And I'm going to share with you some of the things that life has dealt me in sobriety. And you know what? I used to say, these terrible things were happening to me in sobriety. And I've sort of learned to look at them as opportunities to grow. Now, one of the things that I've learned is that it's really easy to work the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and to sound marvelously spiritual when the wind is at your back. It's very easy to do. But when you're going against the wind, sometimes it gets really tough. And the thing that I've learned here and that has served me well is that no matter what, I suit up and show up. And for me, no matter what, I talk about what's going on. And a lot of times when I'm in the middle of it, I may say it in such a way, because I'm still really sick, I say it in such a way. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about manipulation through kindness. That's me. Get what you want by being just as sweet as you can be. And not an ounce of honesty in any of it. You know, it's just that insidious dishonesty. You know, I thought when they were talking about all that honest stuff when we got sober, it was like, are you a thief? You know, those kind of things. And I'm not a thief. That's not been a problem for me. And then I thought back, maybe it has been a problem for me. I seem to embellish expense reports. You know, it's really tough to get really honest. It can really mess up your day to begin to see the truth. And what I really had to face with me is how I would always manipulate people with kindness. I could never be direct. I'm Southern born and raised, so it's easy to come talk to people in the South. And I don't know about you, but I was always told to be nice. Be nice. My mother said, be nice. And whatever you do, you don't ever tell anybody the truth. You just be nice. And then I get into this organization, and wow, it's hard to tell the truth. Somebody can, you know, because you're like, oh, that might hurt their feelings. Or, I mean, what am I going to say? And, you know, your ass may be on the line, but lists don't tell the truth. And I just didn't get it for a very long time. I just didn't get it. And I have a wonderful AA sponsor. And Dottie and I had separated for about 10 years because Dottie was going through a time in her life. And there's one thing that's really clear for me, and that's, and I loved her and I was always there, but the sponsor-sponsee relationship we had to terminate for 10 years, this is one thing that's really clear for me, is I need sponsorship. I need somebody there who can sponsor me. And Dottie and I are back together again, and it's better than it's ever been. But I can remember a long time ago when Dottie and I were first together, and Dottie said, you know, Polly, I really love you, but whenever I ask you to do something, I never know if you mean it, because you'll always tell me yes. And sometimes I wonder if you do things when you really don't want to, just because you're so afraid to be honest. And I've had to work on that a lot. And then sometimes I'll tell somebody yes, and then I know it's like I have to get honest, and I have to do the tough thing, which is call back and say, geez, I'm really sorry that I told you that, but the truth is, yada, 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 yada. And I'm better. You know, it's progress, not perfection. I can still catch myself doing it. But it's certainly, I have learned some honesty in this program. And I've learned that the truth will set you free. Because see, what I do is that I would lie to you, and then I would resent you because I lied to you. and you didn't appreciate what I was doing for you appropriately. How much I had sacrificed myself. And sick stuff. You don't learn that in the first couple of years of sobriety. You don't learn that dark side of yourself in the first few years of sobriety. It takes a while to stick around here. It takes a while. Some of the gifts of sobriety, and I just want to hurry up with this, has been my marriage to Dave. And Dave and I have, it has been my training ground. It's been, and there's no better place in all the world to train than in a marriage, because that's going to be the person who sees every inch of you. And it's kind of like the good and the bad. It's kind of like the seventh step prayer, you know, take the good and the bad. And that's what happens in marriage. And I love the man I'm married to. I love him today more than I did 17 years ago when we got married. And I've known Dave my whole sobriety. And I'm just so grateful for the marriage we have today. And for the first 16 years of our marriage, the first 12 years of our marriage, I'm telling you, it looked like we had the Midas touch. I mean, the Midas touch. Everything we touched. I mean, life was going good. We were active in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. We were sponsoring people. We were getting to speak all around, and things were great. And 5 years ago, it hit the fan. And we got some opportunities to grow. And Dave lost his job. And we didn't really think it was going to be a big deal. We thought, he's a computer scientist. It's not like a big deal. And what we discovered is the world was not interested in a 57-year-old computer scientist. And things began to start to look really bad. And it looked like if he didn't get a job pretty soon, because I was the income. He had some jobs, but they were like minimum wage jobs. It had a far cry from the job that he had, and it couldn't meet our obligations, i.e. our house payment. And it looked like if something didn't happen pretty soon, we were going to lose our house. And I was angry, very angry. Now, I don't know what your perception is of what you think your sobriety is, but I'm going to tell you what my perception of my sobriety, and I had no idea, at 16 years of sobriety. And my perception was, how can this be happening to me? I had my fist at God. How can this be happening to me? Don't you see how many people I sponsor? Don't you see how much service I am in Alcoholics Anonymous? How can this be happening to me? Otherwise, when I looked at myself square in the face, of course, after inventory, what I found out is that I was wanting to be rewarded for staying sober. And the reward was sobriety. But see, I wanted more. In other words, those life events were not supposed to happen to me. Don't you see, who I am? Ego everywhere. And we lost that house. We had to file bankruptcy. And the shame of all that was almost more than I could bear. What will people think of me? Look how sober we are. What will people think of me? And it was hitting that bottom, that emotional bottom, at that level that I finally found out. And what my Al-Anon sponsor had been trying to tell me for years, and that is, Polly, it's not your business what people think of you. Your job is just to pick up this program and go do whatever God asks you to do. And I can tell you, there's life after foreclosure, there's life after bankruptcy, and all that stuff. And Dave, my husband I was just telling Danny and a few other people, my husband has just started talking about it. And And what I've learned since he wasn't, you know, sometimes people have a hard time talking to me because I do all the talking. And so he hadn't been saying too much. And so he started talking about it. And he did it for the first time week before last. We were both at a conference. And it was amazing what he learned compared to what I learned. And my learning was all about, you know, being able to accept what people say and to see how my ego was attached to everything I did. And, you know, and it's like people wouldn't think I was working a good program, and being able to have some form of control. And, of course, the control was instead of you doing things for me, I was doing it for you. And I realized what a huge power trip that is. And I got to see a lot of those character defects of mine, and which hadn't changed. I was still being so nice, and that hadn't gone away. Now, Dave, I can tell you right now, he don't care what you think about him. That's not his deal. His deal is I found out that his whole thing and what he learned about was all about job stuff and where he was coming from with his job stuff. And it's been amazing, the adventure that we've had. And I'm really grateful today. And I want to let you know that it's been a long 5 years. But my husband's company was going under, had sold, and he was going to be laid off again. And on March the 30th was going to be his last day again. And I can hear Dottie's voice. And one of the things that she says when experiences keep happening is she says, repeat for correction, repeat for correction. And I'm like, what are we doing? What did we do? What didn't we do? And then I wrote down and I talked to Dottie, and Dottie says, well, Polly, maybe none of it's like you're looking at it. I said, but here it's happening again. And she says, well, his job is ending. That doesn't mean that he's going to be out of work. And Dottie's taught me so much about faith because of all the things she's been through, and she has this relationship with God that's so precious. And she says, it doesn't mean that he's going to be out of work. It just means that his job is ending. And she just looked at it that way. And that's exactly what happened. He got offered a great job. Now he's not 57, he's 62. And, I mean, it's like, wow. And so for today, I've got the wind at my back. I've got the wind at my back. And it's really nice to have the wind at my back. And I want to quickly tell you about those two sons, and I'm going to sit down. My youngest son, James, is 14 years sober in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm so grateful to this program. And if you're out there trying to fix a kid, I tried to do that. And James tells me forever, if you had let me alone, I would have got here sooner. I just about love that poor kid to death. And when I was 6.5 years sober, he said he wanted what I had. And at six and a half years before, I was supposed to attend a function at his school. And I will never forget this, because I think it's the thing that stays in my mind. And James looked at me with all the hate a little kid could possibly have and said, don't you dare show up at my school, because I am ashamed of you. And 6.5 years later, he wants what I have. And I'm here to tell you, we have more fun. And Kelly, his wife, is 8 years sober. And we do things as a recovering family. And God's been really good to us. We've had so many gifts. Just like coming here to Covington's a gift. I mean, I get to get on an airplane, and I get to come here. And the beauty is that I've met some of you before. I've known a lot of you for a long time. And here we are in this room together. And it is so magnificent that I get to do that. And this past Thanksgiving, we've done two international conferences together in Seattle and in San Diego as a family. It's just like the best. We're already planning 2000 in Minneapolis. And Jill has been at conferences. When I'm running around being grandma and running after these little kids, it's just the best. In fact, she let me go to a meeting and she was grandma. I just shoved, because I go to these conferences and we have our grandkids. And so it's just the best. Well, what happened was, is last Thanksgiving, I got invited to speak in Bermuda. So as a family, James and Kelly and the boys, we all went to Bermuda and had Thanksgiving. You know, how do you get from there to here? How does that happen? And I can remember when we were really involved in a conference called the Powwow. And the first year we went, I spoke at it. And it's held in this beautiful resort in Palm Springs, and these beautiful rooms. And we as AA get them really cheap because we do it in June, and it's hotter than Hades there, and nobody else wants to go. But we get these fabulous rooms in this hotel at the Powwow. It's just like the best conference. And I'm looking at Dave 3 years ago, and I'm saying, look where we are. Look where we are. We don't have a pot or a window. And we're at the Esmeralda and Indian Wells at the Desert Powwow. How does this happen? Alcoholics Anonymous, just suiting up and showing up and doing the deal, and it happens. The miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. When our grandson Ryan was born, I thought I'd died and gone to heaven. I had just died and gone to heaven. And when he was a year and a half old, we found out he was profoundly deaf. And it was like, God, how can this be happening? How can this? And I was so angry at God. I had an anger that was far worse than anything about Dave's job. Because it was like, God, look at all these people who have all these kids they don't even want. And here's this baby that we want so bad. And look what he's got to do in life. And you see, one more time, my perception was distorted. A disease of perception. Because, see, I don't have any idea what God has in store. I don't have any idea what God has in store. And this little boy has changed our family. This is a family that's been torn apart by the disease of alcoholism. And because of this little boy, this family is healing. And this is a family that signs. And Chris, our little grandson, signs. And we're sure that Ryan's deafness saved Chris's life because Kelly had a test run because she had had a child with a birth defect. And they found out that she was in late stages of aborting the child she carried. And they did a cerclage on her and put her to bed for 5 months. And we have Chris. And there's not a doubt in anybody's mind, if Ryan hadn't been deaf, we wouldn't have Chris. Because she'd have never had the test. And you know, I don't know about you. I don't know what your deal is. But I have a feeling it's the same as mine. God was always performing these miracles. Always. My life was always full of miracles. But until I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I couldn't see them. I absolutely couldn't see him. I was so steeped in self that when God was performing a miracle that I couldn't see what that was for me, I didn't know that I had the miracle. And I'm so grateful for the miracle today. I'm so grateful for the miracles that God has given me. And at the time, I thought it was absolutely the worst thing that could happen. Now, we learned to sign because Ryan's deaf. My little granddaughter, Katie, I look at Katie, and here my son, Russ, was trying to commit suicide every other day, and it was the rooms of Al-Anon that said, Polly, you leave this boy alone. And finally, a man in AA came up to me because I was just so devastated about how my son was trying to kill himself. And he says, you know what? You need to read the chapter to the agnostic. You need to know that God either is or he isn't. He is either all things or he's nothing. And what God does with his kids is none of your business. And I was able to release my son. Now here is a son. I always can see the scars. Because if you're around somebody who mutilates themselves, Russ is covered with scars. But he's got Katie. And we got another one on the way. And Katie signs, and Chris signs, and everybody signs. And that's how we communicate with Ryan. And see, it was a gift. We went to school to sign because of Ryan. And lo and behold, God used that. I have had the opportunity about 8 times in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous to carry the message to somebody who's deaf because I sign. I never knew I was going to get that gift. I never knew that God was going to give me that gift. And the first time it happened was a little over 2 years ago, and I'm sure none of you are like this, but I had to go to this meeting in the middle of the week up in Rancho Cucamonga, and it's a long drive. It's over an hour from where I live. It's on a Tuesday night. It's going to be 20 people in a smoke-filled room, and I have to get up at 5 o'clock, and I don't want to go, and I'm complaining, yada, 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 yada. I'm sure nobody else does that, but that's what I did. But I've always just heard, get in the car. Just get in the car. And I got in the car, and I went to the meeting. I took the action. I took the action contrary to the way I felt. I didn't want to do it, but I did it. And I walk into this meeting, and the secretary comes running up to me, and he says, Polly, oh, my God, there's a lady here. She's deaf. She has four days of sobriety, and she can't read lips. And I said, Mike, it's okay. I sign. And I was able to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to that lady. Now, I was really slow. I'm still slow. Compared to a deaf person, I am very slow. But, you know, they don't care. They do not care. And I got to go to that meeting about a month ago. Same attitude, same action. I knew same old story. Room full of smoke filled, 20 people, drive an hour back, have to get home really late at night, get up at 5 o'clock, yada, 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 yada. Same complaint. But I know to take the action, just get in the car. And I go to that meeting, and lo and behold, that secretary walks up to me, and he says, you remember that lady? And I said, yeah. And he said, she couldn't be here tonight, but she wants you to know how much she appreciates you carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to her because she's still sober. We never know. We never know. Every one of us makes a difference. It's so important. It doesn't matter what I think. It doesn't matter what I feel. It just matters what I do. It just matters what I do. Is to just get up and do the deal. And if you're going to come to me and talk to me about a lot of feelings, you're probably not going to get a lot of sympathy. Because what I want to know is I'm not interested in how you feel. I'm just interested in what you're doing. What are you doing in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous? Because I can tell you, most times I don't feel like it. I really don't feel like it. Sometimes I'm tired, and I don't feel like getting up one more time. And you know, it's not about me getting up one more time. It's about me surrendering my will and my life to God and doing whatever it is He'd have me do. And every time I do it, I feel better. I get the feelings by doing the action. The feelings come as a result of the action. And I never, ever knew that. I always thought you were going to make me feel better. That's how it was going to work. You were going to make me feel better. And today I know. It's all in the actions. My life is beyond anything I could have ever, ever expected. And the gifts I have are beyond anything that I ever thought I could have. I would have just sold myself so short if I had just taken what I want. But God has given me so much more. And He has given it to me in such a special way. And I think He's gentle. God has been gentle with me. He's never given me more than I can handle. And some people's loads are much heavier than mine. But I'm grateful today. I'm really glad that the wind is at my back today. I'm very glad of that. But I know life's out there. And I can remember an old man in Texas. And he used to say, you know, this too shall pass, whatever it is. Because life is life. And I'm really grateful to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous that I've been able to do life on life's terms today. And most of all, I'm glad that you gave me the God that I have, that I can experience the peace that I have. and be able to go to bed at night and be able to have that sense of ease and comfort because of a program called Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's always what I was looking for in alcohol and drugs. When I was in Center Hospital, one of the counselors used to start every day with a prayer, and I always end my AA talks with it, because this it's what this program means to me. I sought my God I could not see. I sought my soul eluded me. I sought my brother, and I found all three. In fact, I'd like to say I sought my sister, and I found all three. God bless you. I love you.